And that's the kind of initiative that we need to see more and more countries take, and we need to see it be part of the domestic debate in the United States and in the other countries with nuclear weapons. Because until we focus with great clarity on this question, that the challenge we face is the existence of nuclear weapons, and the nine countries that have nuclear weapons and threaten to use them as part of their military and political policy, we're not going
Princeton
to get away
Professor
from
that.
We're going to keep coming back to crisis.
We thank you for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a live performance by Antonio Rey on Thursday, March 7th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Antonio Rey is one of the leading flamenco guitarists of Spain today. Rey will be with flamenco dancer and singer Mara Rey. Again, that's Antonio Rey on Thursday, March 7th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's a couple minutes past five, and coming up next we have KBOO Evening News. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Gazelle Consulting, providing HIPAA compliance and IT security services to businesses throughout Portland and across the West Coast, including HIPAA consulting, software and risk assessments, and trainings. More information online at gazelleconsulting.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Washington State Representative Pramila Jayapal introduced Medicare for All legislation in Congress this morning.
Chicago will elect its first black female mayor next month.
And Trump's former attorney Michael Cohen testified today before Congress on the president's high crimes and misdemeanors.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Washington Representative Pramila Jayapal introduced Medicare for All legislation in Congress this morning. Within 1 year of passage, the bill would provide improved Medicare coverage for everyone under 20 and over 54, implementing coverage for everyone else within 2 years. The bill was written with the help of many special interest groups, including nurses, doctors, disability rights activists, advocates for the elderly, public citizen, and the Center for Popular Democracy. The insurance and pharmaceutical industries played almost no role in the bill's creation. With more than 100 co-sponsors, the bill is comparable to Bernie Sanders' Senate bill, but goes for full implementation in 2 years instead of four, in part as protection if the Republicans take back the House in 2020.
Transportation companies in Portland have responded to the reported rise in street violence against LGBTQ Portlanders with offers of safe rides. Organizers who spoke with KBOO News said they don't want to list all contact information publicly to protect riders and drivers. But Lyft tweeted a $15 ride credit on February 23rd for LGBTQ customers who feel unsafe traveling in Portland. Uber will provide rides to events at the Q Center for people who fill out a form request on the Q Center website. The volunteer-run Safe Ride PDX project offers free rides by writing to queerridepdx@gmail.com. The Portland Mercury reports that over 500 people attended a listening session at the Q Center on Sunday, where many LGBTQ people testified to threats and assaults. But a check of the Portland Police Bureau bias crime statistics for the queer community lists just 12 confirmed reported incidents for 2018, the last full year of complete statistics.
A police memo obtained by the Oregonian newspaper shed some light on the fallout from a police shooting in early January. KBOO reporter Sam Bowman has more.
On January 6th, a Portland cop fatally shot a legally blind black man who had just been released from the hospital. Andre Gladden had knocked on a man's door in the area near Adventist Hospital and appeared confused and possibly in the midst of a mental health crisis. After Gladden did not leave, the man called 911. After a struggle inside the apartment, the details of which remain sketchy, Officer Consider Vosu shot and killed Gladden. Just last week, on February 22nd, a grand jury declared Vosu's actions to be, quote, a lawful act of self-defense, unquote. One of the most prominent details of the killing is the knife that police say they found in Gladden's possession, a non-folding, 3.5-inch double-sided blade with a finger ring. Sources have told the Oregonian newspaper that the knife resembles those used by officers, though the police bureau has not said who it believes the knife belonged to. However, the day before the grand jury decision, the 21st, Chief Danielle Outlaw sent a training memo to Portland officers saying that, after extensive conversations between the bureau's top tactical trainers, cops will no longer be allowed to wear knives and certain other tools and weapons on the outside of their vests where they could be accessible to others. Other items no longer allowed to be openly carried by cops are scissors and trauma shears, glass punches, seatbelt cutters, and handgun and AR-15 magazines. The memo does not mention the Gladden killing, despite the clear relation between that case and the issue of accessible police weaponry. However, one of the main reasons for the changes given in the memo is that items hanging from the dominant hand side of a cop's vest could interfere with their ability to draw their gun. Members of Gladden's family met with Mayor Wheeler and Chief Outlaw last Friday, just hours after the grand jury cleared Officer Vosu. At a press conference soon after that meeting, held outside City Hall, Gladden's sister Donna Martin gave the family's viewpoint on the allegation that Gladden attacked Vosu with the knife. Fair warning, the audio is not that great. She first stated that the family had talked with the medical examiner who performed Gladden's autopsy, who told them that Gladden had no minor lacerations consistent with a legally blind person carrying a loose knife.
If in case this knife happened to have had his fingerprints on it, God knows how that happened. I have my opinion, but I know for a fact that that weapon did not belong to him.
In case you couldn't hear, that was Andre Gladden's sister, Donna Martin, saying that there's no way the knife in question could have been Andre's, and that if his fingerprints are found, she does not know how that happened. And you can hear people in the background saying they put them on there. The Portland police say they will release the full investigative file by March 8th, and the district attorney will likely release the grand jury transcripts in a matter of weeks. For KBOO, I'm Sam Bowman.
Oregon Secretary of State Dennis Richardson died last night of brain cancer in his Central Point home. He was the first Republican elected to a statewide office in Oregon for over 30 years. Last June, he announced that a small tumor had been found in his brain and that he was being treated. Richardson had planned to run for re-election in 2020, but was already scaling back his activities. A veteran, a Mormon, and a deep conservative, Richardson had served 6 terms in the State House. Oregon Governor Kate Brown will select the new Secretary of State, a position she previously held.
Oregon Community College tuition rates have already outstripped wages, yet the legislature is set to reduce subsidies even further. The Oregon Community College Association has come up with a plan to stand up for 2-year colleges. KBOO's Teresa Mitchell has more.
You're John Wyckoff, Deputy Director of Oregon Community College Association.
Yes, that's right.
And I understand that an event is coming up to try to encourage funding for community colleges and to work on more affordable tuition. Can you tell me more about that?
So on March 7th, we will be having Community College Day in the Capitol, and there will be a lot of events going on around that. One of them will be the convoy to the Capitol with folks from all 17 colleges leaving from Chemeketa Community College and coming and convening at the Capitol at about 11:30 a.m. or so. And then they will do a march around the Capitol with the group and with college mascots and a group of folks from community colleges and from their communities going around the Capitol to kind of make noise and urge legislators to fund community colleges. And then they'll be meeting on the Capitol steps to meet with some of their legislators who will be there waiting, and then they will, and then many of our community college folks will be going in the Capitol that day and meeting with their legislators to talk about the needs for community colleges across the state and particularly for our students. What we're looking at is a budget right now from the governor's budget at her base budget funding level that would be a very significant cut for community colleges that would lead to further tuition increases and significant program cuts, which is really just a lose-lose for our students and for Oregonians. And so we're asking the legislature to fund a no-cuts budget for community colleges that would hold the line on tuition, and then to make additional investments in career and technical education, as well as for wraparound services that we know nearly double completion rates for students as they're trying to achieve their academic and career goals.
Well, then I have a couple of questions for you. First, do you have an idea of what average tuition costs are like for a full load at a two-year college or community college?
We price by the credit hour, and we are now a bit over $100 per credit hour.
So $1,200 before you buy books.
That's right. And that's kind of the minimum. We're probably more around $110 now. For context, the state of California is about half that in per credit cost.
And given the wages that are available to college students, that could easily be a month's wage going into tuition.
That's right. And, I mean, I think it's worth knowing nationally. We find nationally that about almost half of students are food insecure, and about around 10% of community college students are actually homeless. And we see a lot of that here in Oregon, I mean, especially with what's been going on in the housing market. As home prices and rental prices have gone really skyrocketed, it puts pressure on students as they try to struggle to afford things like tuition, textbooks, living costs, and then just the basic necessities like food.
Well, that's pretty shocking, really, and it makes the requests of the group even more mild when I'm reading them. It says to keep tuition increases to roughly 3.5% in each year statewide of the upcoming biennium and to maintain current programs and services. And you say you need $647 million in funding just to do that. So we're already talking about something that costs too much, and you're just trying to hold the line.
We offer, we really run the entire range of certificate programs and career and technical education programs that are really based on high demand, high wage areas of study, or high demand, high wage jobs in those communities. The colleges all go out and find out and do study to find out what are the unmet needs in their communities. So they're really targeting those programs to what are unfilled needs in high wage areas in their communities. And so those students who are place bound, they study in their community, and then they get those family wage jobs in their community.
Okay.
That's right.
I understand you're meeting at Chemeketa Community College at 11 a.m. on the 7th of March?
March 7th. That's a Thursday.
And then we'll be all driving to the Capitol. I wish you luck. Do you have anything further to say about it?
I guess a couple of things. If folks are interested in getting more information about community colleges, we have a website that talks about the work we're doing around our budget. It's www.myoregonfuture.com, and folks can find more information there about the work the community colleges are doing. and the ask that we're making on behalf of our students and for Oregonians.
Okay. Well, John Wyckoff, Deputy Director, Oregon Community College Association, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
For KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell.
President Trump's former attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, appeared today before the U.S. House Oversight Committee to testify about Trump's high crimes and misdemeanors during and before his ascendancy to the White House. Cohen's testimony implied that Trump had lied to the FBI and the Justice Department over the WikiLeaks email dump, had suborned perjury by directing Cohen to lie to Congress about the Trump Tower Moscow deal, had engaged in various wire and bank fraud schemes, and had violated campaign finance laws by hiding his payment of hush money to porn stars. Cohen has already been convicted of lying to Congress. Now he says his previous mendacity was in service and loyalty to Donald Trump. Cohen said he now wants to set the record straight as he faces 3 years in federal prison. Speaking of President Trump, Cohen said, quote, he is a racist, he is a con man, and he is a cheat. Cohen's testimony took an otherwise repentant tone, saying he had blindly followed Trump's commands. Republicans on the committee generally defended Trump and assaulted the character of Cohen, repeatedly pointing out that Cohen had already been convicted of lying to Congress. Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, responding to Cohen's characterization of Trump, called Cohen a, quote, fraudster, cheat, felon, and in 2 months, a federal inmate. At one point, Republican Representative Mark Meadows of North Carolina brought out Trump's staffer Lynn Patton, who is black, implying that her presence on Trump's staff proved that Trump was no racist. Representative Rashida Tlaib immediately assailed the obvious tokenism, saying, quote, just because someone has a person of color, a black person working for them, does not mean they aren't racist. She continued, quote, and it is insensitive. The fact that someone would actually use a prop, a black woman in this chamber, in this committee, is alone racist in itself. President Trump responded to the committee hearings with outrage on Twitter, perhaps annoyed at being upstaged during his second summit with the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un in Hanoi, Vietnam.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the BOO. At 6, it's The Underground. Then at 7, it's Combined Culture Radio. Tonight's weather will be a 30% chance of snow and rain showers with a low of 31. Tomorrow's weather will be the same, 30% chance with a high of 41. Today in history, in 1908, the 46th star was added to the U.S. flag with Oklahoma's admission to statehood. Quote of the day is from author John Steinbeck, born this day in 1902. Man is the only kind of varmint, sets his own trap, baits it, then steps in it.
No matter who wins the Chicago mayoral runoff, the Windy City will have its first female African-American mayor this spring. Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckelwinkle are facing off April 2nd to replace Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who decided against running for re-election. Lightfoot identifies as, quote, an out-and-proud black lesbian and has made reforming the police department a major plank of her campaign. She's a former assistant U.S. attorney. After 17-year-old Laquan McDonald was fatally shot by Chicago police in 2014, Lightfoot was appointed by Emanuel to head the newly created Police Accountability Task Force. Preckwinkle is the Cook County Board President and has made education and a $15 minimum wage focal points of her campaign. The winner will become the second woman and the second African-American elected Chicago's mayor. according to the Chicago Public Library. Eugene Sawyer, a black man who served as acting mayor of the city for 2 years, is also running.
The white supremacist Coast Guard officer who compiled a hit list of Democrats was indicted today on gun and drug charges. A federal grand jury in Maryland indicted 49-year-old Christopher Paul Hassan for illegal possession of firearm silencers, possession of firearms by a drug addict and unlawful user, and possession of a controlled substance. He has been in jail since his arrest February 15th. Hassan allegedly created a hit list that included House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco, Senate Minority Leader Charles E. Schumer of New York, and presidential hopefuls and current senators Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Cory Booker of New Jersey, and Kamala Harris of California. So far, Hassan hasn't been charged with terrorism, but federal officials said today they are still gathering evidence. Hassan, a former Marine, worked at Coast Guard headquarters in Washington.
Where many people see chaos, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael sees possibilities.
It's more than a coincidence that the United States and the global ecology are collapsing at the same time. Think of capitalism or greed as an infection that just as it was killing its European host land, discovered America. More land, trees, and people than they'd ever chewed up and spat out. I don't want to think about this. Let's talk about the Oscars. I was agog as the Hollywood elite sang along with We Are the Champions, a song Adolf would have loved, and I thank the Academy for finally giving Spike Lee mic time so he could bring down the tweet wrath of Dolt 45. The weather stays crazy. Snowmageddon hits Seattle, then Eugene imprisoning people for 36 hours in an Amtrak. Are we next? The only thing more unpredictable is the future. War with Venezuela, Trump disappears in Vietnam, North Carolina surrenders a congressional seat, Kate Brown listens to Oregonians and says no to Jordan Cove. Maybe new President Pence will prove to be an asset of 350.org and institute the Green New Deal, causing Mitch McConnell to implode. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture. You can find more stories and podcasts at nv1.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Trump's nominee to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Eric Miller, was confirmed by the Senate Tuesday by a vote of 53-46. Democrats who oppose the nomination include senators from states representing tribes in Minnesota, New Mexico, and the nominee's home state of Washington, concerned about his record challenging tribal issues. New Mexico Senator Tom Udall, who's vice chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, spoke on the Senate floor against the nomination, saying Miller has a troubling record on Indian law. Udall pointed to his work as a private practice attorney advocating against sovereignty, Native religious practices, federal recognition, and other tribal issues.
Mr. Miller's repeated willingness to side against tribes, Native American tribes, in court, and the likelihood that such willingness will follow him to the bench, where he would have an outsized influence on the development of Indian law for decades. This concerns me deeply. As vice chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, I pay special attention to a nominee's record on tribal issues, especially if a nominee will preside in a jurisdiction that has 427 tribal nations, as is the case with Mr. Miller. I am concerned that Mr. Miller's record has not shown and does not have the proper respect for tribal sovereignty.
During a Senate committee hearing in October, Miller defended his knowledge of federal Indian law. When asked about opposition to his nomination over tribal issues, he said as an attorney, he was an advocate for clients. But as a judge, he said his role would be different.
Were I to become a judge, my job would be to not advocate for either side, but to neutrally apply the law, and in particular to apply the principles that tribes are independent sovereigns, that treaties with tribes must be respected and must be understood as the tribes would have understood them. And those are principles that, you know, sadly were not always honored throughout our history, but there are important principles that the Supreme Court has emphasized and that I would apply if I were to become a judge.
National Native groups, including the National Congress of American Indians and the Native American Rights Fund, opposed the nomination. Democrats expressed concern over his confirmation hearing, which was held during a Senate recess. Two Republicans questioned Miller. No Democrats were present. Republican leader Mitch McConnell called Miller an impressive nominee who has a distinguished record in both public service and private practice. Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes met with tribal leaders Tuesday in Hayward. The community welcomed him at Le Couturier Community College. The Lieutenant Governor shared tribal initiatives ahead of the governor's upcoming budget address. The budget proposal includes funding for tribal higher education, youth wellness, and family services, local news outlets report. The governor's office and tribal leaders say they're committed to working together on tribal issues. Cheyenne River Sioux Tribal Police seized more than 140 pounds of marijuana and arrested two people this week during a traffic stop near Eagle Butte, South Dakota. During the stop, a canine was deployed and alerted officers to a cargo area in a vehicle where officers found and removed large amounts of the drug, which were hidden inside. According to the tribe, law enforcement placed the individuals in the custody of county officers and turned over the confiscated items to federal authorities. Bison from Yellowstone National Park were recently transferred to the Fort Peck Reservation in Montana, the Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports. It's part of an effort to increase buffalo outside of the park. The five animals will reportedly be quarantined for the next year to make sure they're disease-free. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In response to India's attack on territory claimed by Pakistan in the Kashmir region yesterday, Pakistani jets made airstrikes on the Indian side of the ceasefire border today. An Indian fighter jet pursuing the Pakistanis was shot down, with the pilot now a prisoner. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan appealed for talks with India, referring to both countries' nuclear arsenals, at least 100 warheads between the two, and the pair of air strikes. Today's dogfights between the two air forces were the first to be publicly acknowledged since 1971 and triggered the closure of Pakistan's airspace, all of its commercial airports, and at least eight in India. A Pakistan-based militant group killed 40 Indian paramilitaries on a suicide bombing in Kashmir 2 weeks ago.
The Trump White House says it will investigate U.S. military assessment that global warming is a national security threat. India is curtailing water to Pakistan. An iceberg twice the size of Manhattan is set to break off Antarctica. Plus, kids around the world are protesting and striking for action on climate change. All that and more coming up on Green News Report.
It's Tuesday, February 26, 2019.
A climate change skeptic will lead a White House panel to examine climate change.
Trump White House to investigate U.S. military's assessment that global warming is a national security threat.
The excess that it didn't use always flowed into Pakistan freely. India says that's not going to happen anymore.
India curtailing water to Pakistan. Iceberg twice the size of Manhattan set to break off of Antarctica. Plus,
this is children finding their voice. This is children engaging with global issues.
Kids around the world protesting and striking for action on climate change.
All of that action and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Like, only the Trump administration would find a guy who is pro-carbon dioxide to lead a climate change panel. Like, who else is on this panel? A farting cow and an actual oil spill?
They may know more about the topic. This is your Green News Report.
Get the f*** out of here, man!
Okay, Desi Doyen, iceberg straight ahead.
Yes, indeed. NASA scientists just warned this week that another new massive iceberg, twice the size of New York City, is on the verge of cleaving off of Antarctica, which they say could further destabilize the Brunt ice shelf.
Great.
Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports that the Trump administration plans to create a special White House committee with a mandate to reassess and scrutinize the science underlining the U.S. U.S. military's declaration that climate change is a national security threat that affects U.S. national security interests abroad and at home.
Emphasis on special White House committee.
Special is one way to put it. Notorious climate science denier Dr. William Happer, who has no climate science credentials, will head the panel. Here's Happer in 2014 bizarrely trying to defend carbon dioxide emissions.
The demonization of carbon dioxide is just like the demonization of the poor Jews under Hitler. Carbon dioxide is actually a benefit to the world, and so were the Jews.
Oh my God, he also had this to say about carbon dioxide.
It's just a complete distortion of the truth to call it a pollutant. It's not a pollutant at all.
So he's going to lead Donald Trump's commission on climate change.
Yes, he is.
You know what, Dr. Happer, since carbon dioxide is such a benefit to man, why don't we shut him into a chamber with nothing more than carbon dioxide and see if he believes it's a pollutant then?
Well, Happer either doesn't know or doesn't care that recent studies have shown that too much carbon dioxide actually stunts the growth of plants that we eat and makes them less nutritious.
Doesn't care.
The White House's latest move to undermine the conclusions of the U.S. military came one day after security analysts at the Klingendael Institute, a Dutch think tank, published a new report finding climate change is increasingly a driver behind growing insecurity and violence around the world. The report says climate change intensified extreme weather events are exacerbating existing tensions in already volatile regions with more destructive storms, heat waves, and drought that are, for example, worsening water shortages in the Middle East. Speaking of water shortages, India announced late last week that it will stop sharing excess water that it doesn't utilize with its regional rival Pakistan in the disputed border territory region of Kashmir, an already parched area facing increasing drought. The announcement came just days after a Kashmir separatist group launched a deadly attack on an Indian security detail. India also announced it is constructing a new dam on a crucial river in Kashmir that will also further curtail Pakistan water supplies.
Let the water wars continue.
Well, both nations possess nuclear weapons.
Oh, fun.
Finally, U.S. kids are pressuring their legislators to act on climate change, but in Europe, over the last month, kids across Europe